8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Good evening and welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, the construction of the George Walker Bush Highway, is it a blessing or a curse? The president's take on recent spate of accident on the George Walker Bush Highway, and international relations expert examines diplomatic row between Ghana and Serbia. This is Behind the News, and our text line is 0264-418767. You can send in your comments on any of the topics we will be discussing. The George Walker Bush Highway in Accra, which was open to motor traffic in recent times, is gradually becoming a death trap instead of being a showpiece of Ghana's infrastructural development. Hardly a day passes without an accident being recorded on the highway. Yesterday, the George Walker Bush Highway, otherwise known as N1, witnessed another motor accident which claimed 3 lives. While some pedestrians and the communities that live along the fringes of the highway attribute the spate of accidents to the defects in the road engineering, some experts on road safety think otherwise. What could be the problem and how can it be addressed? Before we take a look at this story, let's visit the president's story, in which President Mills will, on the 5th of March, pay an official visit to the U.S. at the invitation of President Barack Obama. The visit comes barely 2 weeks after the opening of the George Walker Bush Highway, funded by the Millennium Challenge Corporation of the U.S. So, what is this visit for Ghana? To get some understanding, we are joined by the Director of Communications at the Presidency, Koku Anyudoho. Good evening, Koku.
Good evening, madam.
What is this visit about?
Well, like the statement says, it's an official visit, and that's about it. President Mills is going on an official visit to the U.S., and no more, no less.
What exactly will be the itinerary of the president in the U.S.?
Well, these visits normally are characterized by bilateral talks between the heads of state, or presidents, and then you have ministers and businessmen who are part of the entourage who also confer with their counterparts on the other side, after which a communique is issued or will be issued. So it will follow the same format, madam.
Is it likely the president will be briefing Barack Obama on how the MIDA funds were used?
I will not be able to speak ahead of the president, but if it should come up, why not?
All right, Koku, one major project under the MIDA was the Tetekwashi Malam Highway, which was in the news today for registering another fatal accident. How did the president receive the news?
Well, I think it's rather unfortunate and sad what is happening to us. You know, that highway, madam, would have been constructed, I think, as far back as 1965. It was part of the major motorway highway network which President Nkrumah had planned for this nation. So you and I would have been born into a country that already had that highway. For some reason, the 1966 coup took place, and for some reason, subsequent governments have not been able to put that project in place. And so lots of people have encroached and are sitting on land that was supposed to be used for a highway, have gotten so used to it over the period and cannot accept and believe the fact that, well, now there's a highway there. And so things that we used to do in the past, we cannot do any longer. And that's the problem. It's so unfortunate that in our quest to move forward, in our quest to develop, in our quest to ease traffic, rather we are having the wanton loss of of human life, and it's very disconcerting, and the president is not excited in the least.
So what are you going to do about it? What is the presidency doing about the situation?
It's not about the presidency, madam. It's about all of us. I agree with you that, Anizi is the head that wears the crown, but it's for all of us, especially for those of you who have platforms such as these. You know, if you dedicate a whole program behind the headlines, you know, to discussing this matter and educating listeners, it will help all of us, because it's about education, public education, civic education. People need to know that highways are highways. All over the world, highways are highways. And highways have their own highway codes. And you cannot be crossing a highway as if you were crossing a little road in between two houses. And that's the problem that is happening. We all have to accept the fact that that road is no longer what it used to be a couple of years ago. It is now a highway. And once it's a highway, it's a highway. Drivers are going to be speeding, because that's what highways are meant for. Highways are meant for speeding. You understand? And so you cannot be crossing a highway as if you're crossing a little town road.
All right, Kwaku, before I let you go, during the president tour of some markets in Accra yesterday, he bought kinky, and some have described his gesture as a populist tactics. Was that the idea?
I'm rather surprised. You know, madam, the president, since the 1st of April last year, hit the road. You know, having spent the first year, 2009 and 2010, greater part of it, you know, trying very hard to get the economy out of the woods. You know, on the 1st of April last year, the president started his surprise visit. And the first place he went to was the psychiatric hospital in Asylum down here in Accra. And he went subsequently to ministries, departments, agencies, then embarked on his regional tours. And so we all got glued to the massive infrastructure development that is taking place nationwide. So what the president did yesterday is nothing different from what he's been doing in the past. Besides, if you recall, in the build-up to the 2008 campaign, 2006, 2008 election, I mean not campaign, President Musk was in the market. You know, Kandeshi Market, Jufo Jano, Mamprobi, Okanshi Market, 31st December Women Market, markets all over the country. He was in the lorry parks, Kandeshi Lorry Park, and all kinds of places. He was at the beaches, Komenda, Muri, Elmina. It's been the president's style. And so yesterday, going into Mamubi, Nima, Malata, it's nothing that the president hasn't done before. Buying balls of kinky is very anecdotal. Very, very anecdotal. And for people to want to tie the whole trip around balls of kinky is rather unfortunate, because for me, it's very, very anecdotal.
All right. Kwaku, on a lighter note, did you eat the kinky with the president?
That's a good one. Thank you for making me laugh today. I've had a very stressful day, and thank you for making me laugh. I appreciate it.
You are welcome. That was the Director of Communications at the Presidency, Kwaku Anyidoho. This is Behind the News. Now we continue with our discussions on the N1 highway, and we will be talking to Rudolph Beckley, who is the Deputy Director in charge of Research, Monitoring and Evaluation. But before we speak with Rudolph in the studio, I earlier talked to Engineer Magnus Kwashi. I first got his view on the engineering of the N1 highway.
Let me begin this way. You see, every piece of road or every corridor is designed to meet a specific function. Now, the N1, okay, which actually begins from the border with Togo all the way to Abidjan, is classified functionally as a national highway. That's why it's called N1, National Route 1. So it is a highway, and particularly for highways, one of the characteristics of a highway is that it is exclusively for motor vehicles, okay, which means that motor vehicles have priority here. Now, under this condition, what then happens is that if a road has to cross necessarily, we have to do what we call grade separation. You do not actually introduce junctions and so on. However, particularly with this case, from the Tetekwashi to Malam, which has been christened the George Wakabusho Highway, this is a highway that is going through an urban area. And so what it means is that we then have to take into consideration, you know, some urban issues in order that we can reduce fleets between people, particularly soft road users like pedestrians, cyclists, and the motor vehicle. Now, ordinarily, if you take a highway, you do not expect pedestrians and cyclists, you know, interacting with motor vehicles. But in this situation where it is going through a highway, we need to have very good treatment in such that pedestrians and cyclists, you know, can commute without interacting directly with the motor vehicles, hence avoiding as much as possible any traffic incident. Now, if you look carefully at the design, you know, the design attempted, as it were, to grade separate pedestrian ways from pedestrian crossings from the motor vehicle. So you will find that there are few, you know, grid separated pedestrian crossings, okay, which people are expected to use. Now, the challenge, I think, I don't want to call it defense necessarily, is that the challenge is that, you see, you are building this road which is going to, take for example, Apenkwa, where people are used to walking at grade. If you go to Abekala Pass, people are crossing from one end to the other. Then all of a sudden, we introduce this facility, which then requires that people will have to necessarily change their behavior, how they commute. In changing behavior, we cannot just assume that it will happen. And so one of the weaknesses, you know, also with this is that we probably haven't done enough, or rather, let me say that we should do a lot more education, you know, so people appreciate how to use the facility. Okay? Otherwise, or rather, let me say, that is one of the challenges why we are having so many traffic incidents. I have been to the corridor. I've seen lots of school children crossing at grade. The other challenge is that people are not used to walking to the nearest what you call the pedestrian bridge or a traffic signalized intersection, which can actually help them or guide them to cross properly. People just want to do the same things they were doing. So we need a lot of education, okay, and we need also what we call enforcement.
So talking about the behavior, couldn't the engineer have factored it into it?
You're talking about the behavior?
Yes.
You can actually use engineering to control behavior, to self-enforce. You see, so one of the things we need to do is to use the engineering, as it were, to reduce as much as possible conflicts. What it means is that we could have done it in such a way that it is very difficult to cross the road. Now, simply, one attempt you see there is a crash barrier, but the crash barrier is not enough. I presume that if we had even done what we call shrubs, planted shrubs, 1.2 meter high, at the time we started, or even if we did transplant, you see, and we did shrubs in the median all the way through. Now, what it then means is that it is difficult for anyone to just jump over the crash barrier. So that is one of the things that we can do. In fact, it is not late at all. I have seen that we've put chippings and bitumen, and I am an advocate that we should rip it off. We should put some green up. Apart from preventing people to cross, it also reduces what we call glare in the evenings. When the vehicles are moving in another direction, the green will be able to prevent the headlights, you know, to interfere with other people coming on the opposite direction. Now, so this, I believe that we can do and we must do. You know, nothing, other people will say that we should put concrete and so on, but it makes the city too hard and so on. But I believe in the green area. You know, it makes the city beautiful. It also can act as carbon sink to reduce all these emissions that people around the corridor are inhaling and so on and so forth. So indeed, I admit that we could easily have used engineering to reduce this phenomena of jaywalk, where people cross the road anywhere and anyhow. When you talk about safety, we are looking at the road, man and the vehicle. You see, the road is there. The vehicle is there. The directing factor, which is very difficult to control, is human behavior. And so we need to enforce and check people's behavior. Now, let me cite an example. This morning, you know, I was on the motorway, and I went past a truck which was carrying cement. The whole tie, the tie thread, was completely worn out. Two of the ties were burst, and he was driving. Now, what this man is doing now, so you see that the road is there. Now, what this driver had chosen to do was to willfully put himself and other road users under a possible incident condition because he was maneuvering a vehicle which had a defect. Now, so for such a person, you need what we call enforcement.
So what do you expect to see in the enforcement?
We need to look at the speeds. I know we were in meeting last week trying to adjudicate what the speed is supposed to be, because we say that it's a highway in an urban area and so forth. But I believe that in a few days, I don't want to preempt this, you see, but I believe that hopefully in the shortest possible time, the speed will be posted. Because as it is now, it is a highway, but it is going through an urban area. So the police want to be very clear what is speed limit we must use. Nevertheless, I think that all of us as motorists must appreciate that it's the fact that we say it's a motorway doesn't mean that you can now do what you, I mean, do 140 kilometer, 160, because, I mean, it's there, it's so appealing when you're on it, you see. But I believe that we see people trying to interact, people don't know where to cross, people don't know where to do this, and I think that advisedly as motorists, we must also be very cautious at the same time whilst we try to. Ultimately, I know that one of the key items for delivering this road was to reduce, so people believe that it must be easy for them to travel.
Is the deployment of police enough to address the accidents on the road?
Oh, it is. It goes a long way to contribute. You know, whenever there's police presence, I tell you, it goes a long way to contribute. So in the interim, or in the next couple of days or months, we need heavy police presence. Of course, we need, if the AMA can also augment that with the city guards, you see, even to guide people where to cross, to help people prevent what we call jaywalk, you see, so that pedestrians are not exposed to the high speed. You know, that can reduce as much as possible, if not eliminate the accidents that is prevailing now. So that is one of the things we can do in the shortest possible time.
What else should be done in addition to the police deployment?
We need a lot more education on the radio, on the TV, and I believe what you are doing contributes to that. And so we need more of this. You know, we should dedicate the next 2 or 3 months. I was privileged to be resident engineer on the Accra Roads rehabilitation, and I remember, together with the police, it took us, we did about 2 months. You know, police were stationed at particular places. They were guiding people where to pass, where not to pass. There was so much education on the airways, you see. And I think that if we should start this and engage the public seriously, you know, this way, it should go a long way to support it. Whilst at the same time, in the short to medium term, we try to rectify, because of all the engineering challenges we have. For example, I think that if you take, for example, between Jowulu and Tetekwashi, you know, there's a walkway. Usually for a highway, you also wouldn't have expected to have the walkway close to the motor traffic way. You know, so I am advocating, for example, that we relocate the pedestrian walkway to the access road. And then we can now also plant what we call green area to separate the motor traffic way and the service road. You know, this way you then move the pedestrians entirely off the transit route, which is the 6 lanes. You know, and all of these are also the engineering ways of physically and naturally enforcing without so much intervention. This way, then gradually we can now deploy the police you know, to other areas where it is needed most.
Briefly, what is the N1 incident telling us as a nation?
One thing which is also lovely about engineering is that when there are challenges, we do not see them as failures because they give us opportunity, you know, to do better things in the future. So N1, honestly, is a piece of road that is speaking to all of us as engineers, not only engineers, but the general public, you know, that each and everyone must be up and doing, you know, what the professionals or whatever. We must appreciate that we are putting together our knowledge and skill to improve the quality of life of the ordinary Ghanaian. N1 brings this challenge to us, and we shouldn't be giving any excuses. Nobody should be talking about whether there's money to do what or not. That is beside the point. What we must seek to do, or what N1 has taught us to do, is to come together, no matter your background, so that we can think through and prevent something that is actually taking lives, you know, unprecedentedly.
That was Engineer Magnus Kwashi expressing his views on the accidents on the N1 highway and how we should address it. And with me in the studio is Rudolph Beckley, the Deputy Director in charge of Research, Monitoring and Evaluation. Thanks for joining the studio.
You're welcome, madam.
What are your initial comments on the issues raised by Mr. Kwashi?
Yes, thank you very much. Mr. Kwashi has dwelt on a lot of issues, especially with regards to how engineering can also be used to influence behavior. You would observe, and like Mr. Ekoku Anyiru, who gave a background to the construction of the facility, that it is meant to be a continuation of the motorway. And once it's meant to be a continuation of the motorway, and then it has been constructed as we see it now, and the pedestrian has not been shepherded enough, or the pedestrian has not been directed or channeled in a very appropriate manner to a safe designation for him to cross, then certainly there will be a lot of conflict between the vehicles and the pedestrian, especially in other cases, the human being. Mr. Kwashi talked about engineering. Yes, it is true. We really have to look at the road length again and do some re-engineering to incorporate the issues of the pedestrian. We're talking about engineering to be used to solve human behavior. It is true. What are the behaviors? The behaviors are that, one, hitherto the lane was a single lane, and therefore people are used to some crossing behavior or pattern. Now, this crossing behavior has changed because of what? The current situation we have, where we have about 6 lanes. So definitely the crossing behavior must automatically change. If I'm crossing a single lane, if you look at the width of a single lane, it is very different from the width of 6 lanes put together, which means that crossing time is of essence here. And therefore, once the lanes have become wider, then crossing time is of essence. And therefore, if you look at the stretch, there are some sections that are allowed for pedestrians to cross, others not. And you also observe that if you go onto the stretch as we see it now, even the median has not been given enough reservation for the pedestrian. So once you cross, or once you attempt to cross illegally, one of your leg is on a high speed section, another one is on the other speed section, which is, of course, is a very, very, very dangerous issue. So yes, engineering can come in to solve the problem in the short to medium and to the long term. But having said that, we also have observed, because we have also been on the stretch, we have spoken to a lot of the pedestrians, or a lot of the users of the facilities along, or dotted along the stretch. What they say is that they have also observed that the pedestrian crossing, which is the flyover or the footbridge that has been constructed, are very much away from their places of abode. And I see this as being so interesting. You see, the distance between all this, I understand, or I must agree that yes, the crossing facilities are not enough to take care of that number of the people who are within that urban community. And therefore, like I said earlier, if you have a highway passing through such an urbanized area as the previous scholars have indicated, or as the previous speakers have indicated, you observe that they should provide enough crossing accesses so that pedestrians are also shepherded or, you know, moved away from the speed stretches. I agree with that. But then, as we have it now, regardless of the distance, we have a safe crossing point. What we should be doing now, is that whilst we have this crossing point, let us encourage our pedestrians to use these crossing points in the interim when other you know, remedial measures are brought to bear. Like Magnus talked about, yes, there are other interventions that will come on later. But then until they come on, the lives of pedestrians are equally very important to us. That is a very beautiful facility that is supposed to what? Inure to the benefit of what? Economic development. That is supposed to improve our lifestyles or our socioeconomic lifestyle. But this same facility is so beautiful, is because of the use of the facility, is rather ending up killing a lot of us. The bulk of the issue is that, let us remember that mobility goes with responsibility. If you decide to be mobile through walking, if you decide to be mobile through cycling, through being occupants of vehicles or in whatever form, there is a level of responsibility that must be attached to. You go to the stretch now and you see the way people cross the road with reckless abandon. Even under the flyover or the footbridge, people are even crossing the road at grade, where the footbridge is just there. And you observe that now, this is the time where we have to embark on intensified road user education to let the people know about the dangers associated with what? Crossing at grade, especially on that particular stretch of road.
You talked of encouraging them and how much education we need to educate them. So how has your outfit educated these people on this issue?
Yeah, thank you very much. Since the commissioning of this particular stretch and up to today, we have recorded over 10, you know, fatalities. That is not the way to go. We really have to put a stop to that. What we have done as a National Resilience Commission and other stakeholders is that we have put a team together, and this team started working last week, where we have been able to get a van, an education van with megaphones and all that. The National Resilience Commission are part of the team. The police MTTU are also part of the team, as well as the AMA. We conduct what we call, we move on the 14.1 kilometer stretch every morning until evening 7 p.m. What do? We embark on education, educating the road users about the dangers associated with that, with crossing that number of lanes. Whilst we are conducting that education in various languages, in Chi, in Ga, and in Hausa, even if you go there tomorrow morning, you find our vans going up and down. We have also, thankfully, the MTTU has also given us a number of policemen who are at the various vantage points, ensuring that people do not cross the way they are crossing. Whilst we are doing that, we also expect that road users also cooperate with us by understanding that we are there, or the roads are there, to serve them better and not to kill them. In addition to that, the AMA is also on the stretch and has come up with a lot of towing trucks who will tow the vehicles, who will tow broken down vehicles as they get parked on these vehicles, on this road. So we are deploying all these interventions in the interim to nip the problem in the bud. But then as we wait for the contractor or the engineers to put in very proactive measures that would reduce the vehicle and pedestrian conflict, we also are pleading with the pedestrians, using your various media, to ensure that the pedestrians use the facilities as they see them. It is true, I have been on their side, and the distance between the foot bridges is about 2.5 kilometers. We can, in the interim, be doing a little bit of walking to access those facilities. It is better to walk accessing a facility than to risk your life in trying to cross excess lane road to end up being killed.
How effective have your monitoring team been?
Sincerely, we started, like I said, we started just last week. And like I said, every morning, I go there myself. Even today, the AMA boss was there, ACP Awuni, the MTTU boss was there. We were all there to ensure that the team does what they have been assigned to do by way of the terms of reference that we have developed. So yeah, the team is already on the side doing what they are supposed to do. We conduct at least a daily review of what they did. When they come back, we assess whatever they've done before we allow them to go back on the stretch. In addition to that, we've also identified communities along the stretch where periodically we go into the community. Last week, for instance, I personally was in one of the communities where there was a church, and I happened to give a talk at a church talking about the need for pedestrians to be responsible in the use of that particular facility to ensure that what the problems are contained. If we do not involve the pedestrian, if we do not involve the community, to enable the community also accept the fact that that particular facility must be used in safety, like an earlier commentator said, we may not be having the solutions to the problem. Education is very important, but the education also backed with enforcement is the key, because once you are educating the person, what you are doing is that you are transforming the behavior. Now, once behaviors get transformed, they need to be sustained, and it's enforcement that gets it sustained. So that is why we have developed that team made up of the NRSC, the police, as well as the AMA, dotted along the stretch, morning to 7 p.m. We are doing all this, and we expect pedestrians especially to also cooperate with us. Where there is no designated safe crossing point, let us not be convinced or let us not be influenced to cross as those sections.
And what is the response of pedestrians and communities that you've talked to so far?
Yes, like I said earlier on, we have conducted a preliminary audit of a preliminary post-construction audit of the facility. We have given our report to MIDA, and we met with MIDA to talk about the report, of which Magnus was also a part of the meeting. Some of the key issues we raised in that report are coming from the pedestrians. The community that we went to and interviewed a lot of people. We have come up with that particular preliminary report, and we believe that whilst MIDA embarks on their recommendations or their findings, now the problems will be definitely solved. This particular facility has come on board to bring life and economic improvement to us. Let us ensure that it does not turn around to do us in as it is, you know, intending to do. Let us be responsible. I keep saying that mobility goes with responsibility.
So is the N1 highway becoming a curse to us rather than a blessing?
Unfortunately, it's not becoming a curse. It is rather becoming a blessing. But then the point is that we are refusing to use the road in a responsible manner. Let us ensure that to every issue, there are rules. The rules simply states clear that if you are accessing such a high-speed section, there are designated sections to cross. And therefore, if we hadn't provided any designated point, then I believe that we have not done justice or we've not been fair to the road user. But as long as some designated safe crossing points have been provided, looking at the fact that they are not enough, what is even there currently is not being used. So therefore, let us, like I said earlier, let's use our medium to encourage these our pedestrians who we also need alive for economic development to also get encouraged to use these pedestrian facilities. Because it is very important that without these pedestrian facilities, then we are putting our lives at so much risk and so much danger.
Just hold it. Let's go over to the phone lines. In all these developments, one is eager to know what the sector ministry's direction is in dealing with the issue. And Joe Gidisu is the Minister of Roads and Highways. Mr. Gidisu, you listen to Engineer Kwashi and the road safety official. What is the ministry's view on the issue?
I think they could not have said it better than how they have put it. They have been very blunt with the situation. I think right through the submissions by the speakers on the program, one thing that has run through, which I would equally want to emphasize, is that no one can talk about any engineering defects which might be contributing to the high rate of accidents on the road. But we at the ministry, now that the road has been handed over to us, the MIDA has a terminal point in terms of responsibility. As of now, the Ministry of Roads and Highways has taken over the road, and for that matter, if there is anything we could do, we'll be gently taken up. And all those issues that they have talked about as necessary for curbing the spates of accidents that we have on our roads, one would say that almost 90-95% of them could be attributed to human error and, for that matter, indiscipline on our roads. I would want to agree with my earlier colleagues who have spoken on the issue about the need for education. Unfortunately, perhaps we did not go ahead of the commissioning of the project with that aggressive education that we are all agreed upon that there is a need to embark upon now. That in itself made it the situation rather unfortunate that for now we've all realized that there is a need to intensify education, more especially when we all were used to those smaller highways like what we have on the high street in Accra and circle area, whereby people could easily afford to walk across the streets. if you look at the situation we have on the N1, it's completely different. So it's a situation which we should have gone ahead to do aggressive education among our people in the catchment area and even among the motorists. But it's better too late than never. So as of now, that we have all realized that there is a need for us to go back and pursue that aggressive education, I think that I will throw my weight behind it. But equally very important are other medium and long-term measures, as they have spoken about.
You talked of road indiscipline. How do we deal with it?
That is what they have talked about, that for now there is a need to pursue that aggressive education among our people, that life has no spare parts. And if you look at the fact that a lot of the accidents could have been prevented if people were disciplined by way of respecting traffic regulations, this would have gone a long way to promote the tranquility on the road, as one would have expected. But the indiscipline could not be kept only by education, which should equally be buttressed with enforcement. And the enforcement, unfortunately, for now, until we review the road traffic regulations or the road traffic law, we would have to contend with the situation, because for now we would only have these pedestrians, and some of the penalties that we currently have on our law books are not punitive enough to restrain people to feel the magnitude of the offenses that they commit. So in a way, we will have to enforce the laws after the education, and this education and enforcement to be supported by the revision of our traffic regulations, which is being done now. And I'm happy the other stakeholders are all together and are unanimous on the need for concerted action on trying to curb the situation.
Mr. Agidiso, is there any plan to get experts in terms of engineers and social scientists to find a way forward?
I mean, the way forward is not, we don't need any scientists to come back to tell you more than what those experts are talking about. What is needed is, for example, he talked about the distances between the pedestrian walkways, that is the the bridges that we have across the highway. The distances are almost about 2 to 2.5 kilometers apart. What we intend doing is to see how we could have bridged the distances by putting new steel bridges, which we are arranging for other parts of the city to locate them equally along the pedestrian, along the N1. We have equally noticed, you know, before the commissioning of the the highway, these people with disability were demonstrating against those crossings as being unfriendly. We have taken note of that, and we'll try to see what we can do. And the new footbridges will be disability friendly by the erecting of ramps that will enable them to equally walk across. But all these things, if we put them in place without people respecting them and going about their own way of protecting their lives by respecting the traffic regulations, we will still have the menace on hand. So I believe that now that we have all seen the situation, and for the fact that we are all concerned, your program is quite welcome, but we should not wait until the type of accident which happened last night occurs before we devote the airtime that we are using this evening to embark upon this type of discussions and education.
Mr. Gidisu,
so it will be an all-round situation into the next couple of months or beyond to help us all put our back to the wheels to see how best we can keep the menace.
When are we going to witness the re-engineering of the highway?
There is no need for, what do you mean by re-engineering? The re-engineering are perhaps furniture that we could use to improve the situation. For example, as I noted, in the medium and long term, we have plans to erect new pedestrian crossings by importing steel bridges, which we are far advanced in discussions with some of our donor partners towards this. And this perhaps may bring the crossing points closer to some of the centers that we have identified. And equally very important are the is the parking the uncontrolled parking of taxis and trotters at very odd places. We have designated lorry stations or bus stops, but you see most of these trotters just parking at very odd areas, which invariably threaten the lives of other road users. So it is not a matter of re-engineering. It is a matter of making sure that the provisions that people have noted that this is a highway.
All right.
The first time this is a highway that is the first of its type in the metropolis, and for that matter has its own challenges for road users, which we are new to.
All right, thanks for your time.
Education.
All right, many thanks for joining us. That was the Minister of Roads and Highways, Joe Gidisu. Now back to you. How would you respond to the comments made by the Minister?
Yeah, I think the Honourable Minister has said it all, especially in the point where he indicated that, yes, there will be a need to add some more safe crossing points to the ones that are already existing. I think it must be done in the short to the medium term, as he indicated, so that at least crossing points are made more for the pedestrians who are using the road or who are crossing the roads anyhow. And so I think it's a very welcome news from the Honourable Minister. In addition to that, I would also want to say that on the particular stretch, on the stretch that we monitored, we also observed that in some instances the bus stops that had been created bus stops have been created without any access whatsoever to those bus stops. So therefore pedestrians are forced to jump or to scale the median to accessing those bus stops. So in the interim measure or the interim measure that the Honourable Minister is proposing in bringing the steel bridges, those bus base must also be looked at, so that at least some accesses will be provided to those bus base. So that is my view, that is the addition to the Honourable Minister's input.
Engineer Kwashi was calling for some green zones along the road. Is that something we should consider?
Yes, I think that would be a very ideal thing to consider. But then looking at our behaviors, looking at the way we handle ourselves, especially when it comes to this road infrastructure, I don't think the green would be ideal. Even we have the physical segregations and we have the physical measures to segregate pedestrians by way of the medians, cement, medium, but then people are also crossing. Look at the typical case of Kandeshi, where people even jump over the median until recently a wire mesh was introduced. So I would rather suggest that we put in a physical measure that physically restrains the pedestrian from accessing the other point of the road by crossing the road. We should discourage the movement of the pedestrian across the road and rather find ways and means of channeling the pedestrian appropriately to a safe crossing point where they can use the footbridges to cross the road safely. If you put in greens, like it happens in developer, it's so nice, but then our behavior will force us to even go through the greens. The greens are just trees and all that, which certainly pedestrians will still go through. So let's physically discourage them from that movement so that we can keep them alive. If we don't do any physical measure, like it's happening on the Carnation Stretch, we may not get the results. So let's do that physical segregation and rather now channelize them onto that central point where they must at all costs cross the footbridge. I think that would be a long-lasting measure than the green, even though the green has a lot of advantages when it comes to the environment.
This is a message from a listener, Reverend Bentle from Apenkwa, and he's asking, how do we expect children attending the Apenkwa cluster of schools to use the footbridge at Abofu before making it to school?
Yes, Reverend is very right, and it's one of the findings we observed when we did a preliminary post-construction study, and it's part of the recommendations that we have put across to the MIDA. So if, like the Honourable Minister said, one of the locations of the steel bridges that is coming on to augment those that are already in existence will be one at Apenkwa, where there's a school, which of course school children will also need that particular bridge to be doing a crossing. So certainly, yes, Apenkwa happens to be one of the problem areas that will be looked at in the short to medium term, like the Honourable Minister talked about.
With regard to yesterday's accident, there was power outage.
Yes.
How can that problem be solved?
Yes, and again, with the recommendations we passed, we have also indicated that the signals on this particular stretch be served with a solar panel, so that there will be a sustainable and 24/7 power supply onto these particular panels. So these are all the recommendations we packaged into this preliminary report and handed over to the MIDA when we met them in our office about a week ago.
So dealing with the accidents on the Wakabush Highway, what is the way forward?
Yeah, the way forward is simply that we must be disciplined. We must be responsible. And let me also say it here that, you see, God will never do by miracle what we are supposed to do by responsibility. We must be responsible as Ghanaians. We must be responsible as road users. Without responsibility, we cannot go anywhere as a nation. The level of indiscipline is getting so much that we take anything at all for granted, and it's very unfair. It's very bad. If we really want to stay alive, we must be responsible, especially in the use of the road.
This is Behind the News, and we are still on the George Wakabush Highway in Accra and its recent state of accidents. Mr. Beckley, before we let you go, a listener, Andrew Manga, is asking, are we going to see speed ramps on the road?
Not really. We're not going to see speed ramps, because the objective of that particular construction is to improve travel time. Once we are able to deploy these interventions we've talked about, once we are able to put in these interventions to ensure that we move the pedestrian away from the conflict zone, then we don't need a speed ramp. Because once we are able to do that, then there will be any need for a speed ramp. Let me also at this stage say that the advocacy for safe road use practices should not end here. We all belong to communities where there are people who are using this particular road stretch. Once you go out to the community, let us be advocates. Let us talk about the need. Let us talk about the issues where we encourage the pedestrians to use their footbridges. So that once we do that, we are letting people understand the issues better. We are letting people know that the footbridges are there for a reason, not to decorate the road. They are there to be used by pedestrians. So once we go to our communities, let us also champion the advocacy role, so that at the end of the day, we all help to reduce the problem. And let us not forget that road safety is a shared and collective responsibility.
Thank you so much for your time. And that was Rudolph Beckley, the Deputy Director in charge of research, monitoring and evaluation, was in the studio with me. This is Behind the News. Now to our last story. A seeming diplomatic round between Ghana and Serbia is simmering, leading Ghana to scale down her foreign relations with Serbia. Ghana instead is considering recognizing Kosovo, but this has raised lots of concerns. Behind the News this evening looks at this issue with an international relations expert, Dr. Ken Ahosu. Thanks for your time. What are the implications of government's move?
Well, what are the implications? The implications are that I think as of now, Serbia has closed its consulate in Ghana. This thing started some time ago, and what happened is that earlier on, Serbia asked the Ghana ambassador in Serbia to leave. Indirectly, what it means is that Serbia was downgrading its relationship with Ghana. Not long ago, the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs was in Serbia. Serbia has a long relationship with Ghana from the non-alignment days of Kwame Nkrumah, and then especially under President Tito. So they have a special rapport feeling towards Ghana. And recently, as I said, the Deputy Minister was in Serbia and assured them that they are not going to recognize Kosovo. But as I said, about a month ago, it came out of the blue that Ghana has recognized Kosovo. So for that matter, the Serbians called Ambassador His Excellency Mr. Chianu and asked him why the turn of events. But the surprising thing is that Ambassador was not even aware that Ghana has recognized Kosovo. So he was asked to leave. Now, we were thinking that after they've downgraded the relationship with Ghana, that will be the end. But the Serbians have what? Again, closed their consulate in Ghana. It means that they saw that Ghanaians have slapped them in the face, so as to say. The implications, why some of us are surprised, is that even the Serbians themselves are having some form of rapprochement with Kosovo and then the European Union. And they recently appointed a regional representative to work towards rapprochement with the EU on the Kosovo issue. So we are surprised why there should be such a hard line towards Ghana. Now, the implications, some people are talking about for the coach or some sort of, I think with students who are Ghanaians who are on Serbian scholarship in Serbia now, actually 5 in their second year and 4 in their first year, we are not sure what will happen, whether they withdrawn and then they will come back. So that is an issue that maybe the Ghanaian embassy in Serbia has to look at. The second aspect is that the well-being or the welfare of the Ghanaian diplomats in Serbia themselves and their children. For example, the schools that they attend there are special schools, which are very different from the schools that are in Ghana. So if they should be sent back home immediately, the indications are that it's most likely Ghana will eventually have to close its embassy in Serbia. And if they should come back to Ghana, it will be a kind of psychological disallocation for the children. And the other aspect is that some of us expect that the diplomats in Serbia should have been informed about the changes or things that are going on, but so far it appears they have been in the dark.
How then do you see Ghana's intent to forge diplomatic relations with Kosovo?
Not that Ghana plans. I don't think that it's viable for Ghana to establish an embassy in Kosovo. I don't see that happening now or in the short future. Rather, what I think they are planning to do is to open an embassy in Turkey. So it's most likely that if they should close down the embassy in Serbia, they will be relocated to Turkey. But whatever happens, that's foreign policy, and it's left entirely to the president, his whims and caprices, based upon Ghana's national interest. So with Kosovo, that is the question. We don't know if it is the European Union, which has in a way influenced Ghana as to recognize Kosovo. Or it is the Americans who have influenced, but so far there is no information on this issue. So as far as the recognition of Kosovo is concerned, it appears to be a moral issue or what I would call an international norm that is being applied here, that once the United Nations, once the European Union has recognized them, then it follows that all democratic governments in the world should equally recognize them. So I think that is the issue with Kosovo, but I don't see any particular gain that Ghana will gain from Kosovo.
Mr. Hosu, briefly, how should we approach the situation?
Sorry, that is not for me to do. All I can do is to probably say that we should be more careful, or we should be slow in taking steps, so that it doesn't look like we are carrying out the kind of tit of tat type of thing by immediately closing the embassy in Serbia, or for that matter. I think what Ghana can do now is to probably send a delegation to Serbia and then sit down with them, despite the damaged relationship, and try to issues are, because sometimes all friends are the best.
Thank you, Mr. Hosu. That was an international relations expert, Dr. Ken Ahosu, on the seemingly diplomatic row between Ghana and Serbia. And these are some of your text messages. Jifa from Machimota says, it will be tiresome to go that length to use any of the footbridges. I would use the road, but would be very careful. Alhaji Ibrahim, UCC, says, like in the Akan adage, no matter how best the fowl dances, it will not be beautiful in the sight of the hawk. Hence, the opposition will always see something wrong with every move by President Mills. Sly Accra says it's high time we advise ourselves as pedestrians. Some cross the road in a catwalk style. Mohammed Awald says Fifikwete should know that this propaganda will not help in 2012 because Ghanaians are wiser than such gargantuan propagandists, and to accept what they spewed on us in 2008. Baba Musa UDS, the president's visit to some selected markets is very commendable. Ololo Akati, why are the authorities unconcerned allowing this reckless carnage to continue? Alhaji Masoud Dogro says the Better Ghana agenda is felt in every nook and cranny of the country, especially in Fantiakwa. Enoch says the highway is a blessing. Drivers and pedestrians need some education. And Mashud Abilinkwe, until people are compelled to use the foot bridges, these unfortunate issues will be arising every now and then. And this is where we draw the curtains on behind the news tonight. The producers of tonight's program were Kingsley Obintre, Christopher Esiedu, Phyllis Kofi, John Pobi and Bright Agama, and Bobby Nikwe was my sound controller. My name is Agatha Samoa, and thanks for staying tuned.